Blog Talk Radio.
This is your mother's medicine cabinet. This is your host, Frank Reardon. Just screw the music tonight. I forgot to download a song. But, yeah, we didn't have a show last week because I was away in San Francisco. Phenomenal reading and with all kinds of people and all kinds of literary underground people. But we're back tonight, and our guest is Wolfgang Karstens. He's publisher of Epic Rights Press, and a fine writer himself, but tonight we're going to discuss the publishing game and just have like an all-publisher type show. So I believe he's on the line, so let's just bring him in. Hello?
Hey, how's it going, Mr. Reardon?
All right, how are you?
Right on, not too bad. It's smoking hot. I'm sweating like Rita McNeil on a treadmill, but... down in a warm basement with warm beer.
Oh man, it gets hot up there.
I tell you, man, in Canada, it's either too cold or too hot. You know, kind of like life. so I heard you had a good time last week.
Oh yeah, it was phenomenal. Almost anybody I could have asked for out in that West Coast area was there. It was a really good time. We had plenty of beer and heard some pretty good damn poetry. Pretty much everybody brought their A game. It was pretty awesome, I have to say. Probably one of the better events. So, but I'm kind of sad it's over, back to the reality of whatever it is. So I thought I would just start off with asking, I mean, I kind of know the story, but maybe there's some, we get a lot of listeners, so... if you'd like to tell them how Epic Rights came about.
Let's see, Epic Rights Press, of course, that was another night of drunken stumbling. You know, I'd read some of the work by Rob Plath online. Thought it was phenomenal. So I went ahead and I ordered every one of his chapbooks. The last one I read was Tapping Ashes in the Dark. Let's see, it was probably about 2 in the morning. I'd been drinking some wine, reading the book, really digging it. I got to the end, I was like, wow, I got to get something together with this guy. I'd never thought about publishing or starting a press. I mean, I didn't know my ass from my elbow, but this work was so good, and I could see such potential that was lost. Like, every one of the chapbooks was really good, but I could see something more. So I sent Rob an email that night. He said, yeah, man, let's go ahead and let's do it. And I remember stumbling drunk into the bedroom, and I said, honey, I just did it. And she's like, just did what? I just said, I just started Epic Rights Press. And from there, it was just a matter of, I think I went through like 4,000 poems. It took me 9 months to build the book. Of course, that's a belly full of anarchy. The day I got the proof copy, it was the middle of May. I stepped off the back step. It had rained in the night and froze. My first step, I slipped. I went crashing all the way to the bottom, shattered my elbow, blood everywhere. I had a cup of coffee in one hand, a cigarette in the other, belly full of anarchy in the other hand. I hit the bottom. The book was covered in blood. I laid there for... I actually thought I was going to die, and if it hadn't been for my daughters, I look back, and they were quite little. They were these 3 and 4. And then just the look on their faces when I turned around and saw them, I go, that's it, Wolfgang. You got to get up, man. You just got to get up and move, because I had completely knocked the air out of myself. I got up, and I walked around and got everything moving again, a belly full of anarchy, soaked in blood, which was fitting. And that's how it started. And then from there, we just kept going forward and going forward, you know, and looking for better better promotion, better marketing, better distribution. Yeah,
so you got the you got like a pretty good and a eclectic group of writers there, from like Rob Plath to Jason Hardung and John Yammers and Carl Kolesky and a whole slew of other people. Like, how is it that you go about? Do you like read them in other books or something like that, where you decide, man, I want to like publish these other guys?
You know, it's funny. I've always operated under the principle where I didn't take submissions. I find that if you take submissions, it's like, I want to publish the best, obviously. I got to publish work that gets me hard. I find when I take submissions, I just get way too many, and they start attacking you on Facebook and in your email, and if you're at the grocery store picking up some groceries, and then says, hey, my cousin, he writes, you want to look at his work? So I shut it down for that. So mainly, it comes a lot of the way through Tree Killer Inc. You know, if I find some for that, or if I'm doing another project, or a lot of times it's by referral. It's, you know, for instance, the forthcoming book by Zarina Zabriskie, Iron, came about through a referral by Julie Sparenberg, who, of course, did the images for William Taylor Jr.'s An Age of Monsters. Julie got a hold of me, and she said, you know, I know I've read the books. I know what you're into. I think you're going to really, really like these stories. So I got a hold of Zarina. I said, okay, well, you know, Julie says you do some writing that I think I might like. And she sent me some stuff, and I was just blown away. And I was like, okay, well, let's do it. Let's get that book together. And hence, that's how Iron came about. We're going to have images again by Julie in this one, which is going to be really neat. So, you know, it's more just trial and error and luck. You know, there's been people who I've contacted, I've read something, because, you know me, I mean, I try to support the small press however I can, you know, buy the books, especially the anthologies, like, you know, Semi-Permanent Death or whatever, and of course I'll come across the writers that way. And then a lot of times I'll get a hold of them and be like, well, you know, I read that piece, phenomenal stuff, you know, do you have any more, do you have any more like it, do you have any, and it's like, no, sorry, man, I don't. It's like, well, okay, you know, just thought I'd check.
Well, that's cool. That I mean, are you besides like the covers that you have that what's his name, Pablo Vision?
Pablo, yeah.
Yeah. Besides that, are you like the only one basically doing this? Like the books, the editing. That's all you.
You know, I am a one-man wrecking crew. I've done all the books. I had David McLean help me out on a few back in the beginning. Of course, I got Rob Plath now, who is editing Tree Killer Inc. So that's a big thing to come, because that was, you know, just reading submissions alone. It said, well, you probably know this. You've done this. It's a huge, huge thing. So I have him doing the editing. And also with the exteriors, what we decided to do, like I'm sure you've noticed this too as well, is Pablo did pretty much the whole, every exterior. This year we've kind of taken a route, we've kind of, you know, kind of branched out a bit, like the new John Yammers book was done by Arl Raymond, the exterior for Death is Dead, Rob Plaston's book was done by Yvette Soule, of course Rob Bruno Butcher's was done by Elizabeth A. Swark and myself, the forthcoming Iron is done by Sammy, so you know we're trying to expand in that direction, and it seems to be there's a lot more women getting involved now, which is really neat. Iron, of course, I've been criticized for years saying you don't publish any women. Iron is going to be the first book by a female writer. I have a book coming out next year by Misty Rainwater Lights. So you know we're hitting that as well, and you know it's just simply this what I tell them. I say, you know, it has to move me, and if it doesn't move me, I'm not going to publish it. I'm not going to publish it because they're a female or, you know, a Canadian or anything else. It's all about the material.
Yeah, I got to watch Zarina read a couple of stories in San Francisco. She was really, I don't know, outrageous in a good way, I suppose. It's the best
Absolutely.
I can describe it. So I think that we'll have like a lot of good sales coming up with that, in that one at least, I would think. But so now you're talking about your expanding and stuff like that. So What is the new Pagemaster thing that you got going on?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, of course, Epic Rights Press, I've worked with a lot of distributors along the way. I've always found them to be, you know, somewhat lacking, to like put it politely. So my theory was that with Pagemaster, I was always bugging them. I've done all my printing, so all the Epic Rights books are printed with Pagemaster. You know, if you're looking for a printer, I mean, that's, if you've seen an Epic Rights Press book, you know, that's the place to go. I was always bugging Dale, who runs Pagemaster. I said, look, man, we got to get distribution. We got to get distribution. Like, we should just do it ourselves, right? So this went on for a few years. And then finally, about 5 months ago, he said, okay, let's go. Let's do it. And I was like, okay, I'm throwing my hat in right now as the man for the job. I met with him, and I started the very next day. It took me 4 months to put distribution together. What we've done is, of course, coming at it from an author and a publisher, I didn't like the eye-gouging model. So I built it from an author-publisher point of view. So the whole theory behind it, of course, is to give every author and every small press publisher a venue and a presence in the marketplace. And we also worked it down so instead of making the operation run based on these extravagant startup fees and extravagant listing fees and extravagant yearly fees, we worked it down to it's basically all about promotion and sales. So we put 82% net back into your pocket as an author or publisher. And, of course, you know, in order to make this work, it has to be, like, you have to be getting the lion's share of the money. Otherwise, what's your incentive? For years, I've been selling on Amazon.com, for instance. And every time I sold a book, I would lose money. So it was like a case where I had to keep raising the prices to try to meet this inflated bottom dollar. So now, I say congrats to Rob Plath, whose latest book, Death is Dead, was picked up for university study, which was really cool. But how it relates to this story is that I sold 25 books the day before yesterday, and I made more as a publisher from that one sale than I did on a quarterly payment from any distribution house.
And,
you know, that's what it's about, right? I would go, I'd find, like, I would promote the distribution houses. I promote the authors, I promote the press, I promote the distribution houses, I promote the booksellers, right? My theory has always been, well, you know, the more I do for them, the more they'll do for me. But as it turns out, I promote the distribution houses, they take half my money, and that's all they do. A good case in point is, for the recent AWP conference, John Yamerson and I, we put together this package, 250 press releases, 250 broadsides. So I had these printed up. I shipped them to John. He numbered and signed them. We shipped them to the distribution house. These were free giveaways, right? That's all you had to do, give them away. Shipped 250 down, we got 220 back. So in this case, it's like you can't even give out a free handout, right? Everyone who comes to the booth, everyone who walks by the booth, hey, man, here you go. Hey, man, here you go. And that's when it really started to click in. I stopped promoting the distribution houses, and guess what happened? Sales dropped down to nothing. So basically, I'm doing all the work, and they want half my money. And, you know, if you got to have a distributor with teeth, someone who's going to get down and dirty and fight for your titles, keep pushing your titles. And what we've done here is we've made it so that it is the best. Like, you can't beat this distribution system. I mean, 82% net receipts is unheard of. A good case in point, before, a $20 book retail price with a $5 production cost, sell it through Amazon.com, put 50 cents in your pocket. You sell that same book through Pagemaster, and you're putting $7.25 in your pocket. And that's covering your production cost. So your production cost is covered. That 700, 7.25 free and clear in your pocket, as opposed to 50 cents. You know, that's what you want. And if you want authors and publishers to fight for you, you have to give them this, because that's where the money should go. These are the guys who are sweating it out on the front line, trying to take down the Indigos and the Octopus corporate killing monsters, you know. So in a nutshell, wow, that's what it works out to. I've had great reception so far. Just today I got a fantastic book came across my desk called Malawi, which was based on, of course, Africa and the dictator. The book itself was actually banned when the dictator was in power. It was illegal to have the book, illegal to read the book, illegal to bring the book into the country. The gentleman who wrote it came to me today, and he wants to put it through distribution. Now, this is a book. I mean, this book is fantastic. I'd actually read it before it happened. I'd actually been the one who approached him about distributing it. And, like, here's one of those books that makes you excited to be a distributor, proud to be a distributor. This is essential literature. This is what people need to hear. I mean, here these, you know, the dictators were basically robbing the country blind. The whole country's starving. They're walking around in gold-plated everything, living in big palaces. And this is that story. So, you know, as a distributor, I feel really, really proud to be able to bring this thing out and say, look, you know, this is something you need to read.
That's sounds like a pretty good damn idea. Like, I'm just sitting here in awe to hear that part of the stuff that, like, at Amazon and stuff is doing that I never actually even knew what was going on that end. And that's a pretty, quote-unquote, revolutionary idea, I suppose.
That's really the way where I want to market it to. You know, it's funny, too, like, people think about things like Lightning Source. You go, okay, Lightning Source, you know. You put your book through there, and it could be available here, here, and here, and here. But what they don't realize, or what the people who are on the outside looking in, only the person who's doing it realizes, is they're making pennies per book. So, yeah, I mean, great. So you're selling lots of books, and you're making, say, 50 cents a book. Well, you know, I mean, it's a no-brainer as far as I'm concerned. Hopefully what will happen, and this has actually started out, which I'm really excited about, because, of course, you as an author know, I mean, if you want to be successful, you have to do the things that you need to do to be successful. You need to do, you know, spread the word, spread the awareness, send out press releases, book cards, do the shows, do the readings, everything. So now with putting that much money back into your pocket, hopefully that'll go back into promotion and marketing. Because, I mean, ultimately, books is a numbers game.
Yeah, I see
50 cents a book, you know.
You see, like, so many, like, writers who are good writers when they, because a lot of them don't know the business side that you're talking about, and at the end of the day, they're still, like, scavenging through the cupboards to find anything to eat. Like, but this sounds like a good idea that might actually put a few more dollars in not
that's
only
right.
the publisher, but the author's pocket. So that's
no,
definitely
a good idea.
No, I met
with
the
author today who this weekend had to go work on a farm, shingling roofs to put food on his table because he was fucking starving. To pay his bills, he's off shingling. He's not making any money through the basic corporate octopus-killing machine. So in this case, you know, if you're making this, if you're making $7.25 per book, you know, and you're selling, you know, 25 books a week, I mean, you're able to get some food on your table. It just makes better financial sense. And then when you're working hard to sell these books, you're reaping the benefit of that. Some distribution house isn't taking half of it. You know, like we take 18% net just to cover our end of the deal, to do like the shipping and stuff like that, and the fulfillment part of it. That's a far cry. That's 32%, you know, that's going back into your pocket. And that's phenomenal when you start adding that up.
Yeah, if you think about, like, on the writer's side, there's so many houses that are, like, paying you in, I don't know, 10 books. Like, you get 10 copies, and that might be fine and all if you're doing, like, a stapled chapbook. But if you're, like, actually writing, I mean, books, like, books that you would put out, you would think that, you know, that they should get a little bit more return on that. So I'm very curious to see where this goes for you guys.
You know, it's funny, too, because I know that's the classic thing, right? That's buy your own copies for 55%, right?
Yeah.
That's much the standard way it operates here, of course. And especially, it works out even better. Like, for someone like me, who operates Epic Rights Press, I mean, I've gone from publisher of the titles to be the publisher, printer, and distributor of my own titles, which is obviously, that's the ideal situation. But it works the best if you also, if your printer is your distributor, then you have the best of both worlds, because then you don't have to pay the shipping cost of the books to the warehouse. You don't have to pay the upfront shipping cost. For instance, the order that came in the other day for 25 books, you know, as opposed to me tracking down the publisher and saying, hey, man, I've got a big order for 25 books. I need 25 books ASAP. Then the publisher has to put up the money to print those books, ship the books to me. It all takes time. It all takes money. If I'm your printer, I print those 25 books. I cover that order. Minus the production cost, you've just made money. I've just put money in your pocket, and you haven't had to do anything. And that's ideally what I'm – that's, for me, I think, is the ideal point where I want to get to, because the quality's there, the price is there, and the distribution is there. Once we get to that point, man, we're talking about a war machine.
Yeah, it's like refreshing to hear, because there's not so many, I don't know, good print publishers are dying out, at least in the small press world. They die out real fast, and there's not so many of them. And, you know, what's that quote you use often? Press is only small as it's thinking, or I forget.
That's
what,
right.
Any
press is only as small as it's thinking, that's right.
And I know back in the day you probably, like, received a lot of shit when you started out, but everybody's going to start somewhere, I suppose. I mean, you told the story where you didn't know much about business, but now it seems like you're, like you said, setting up a war machine now.
Well, you know, I definitely went through the school of hard knocks in a short space of time. I mean, when I started, you know, the established small presses that had been around for years and years and years, they were saying, well, you know, don't get your sights set too high, because, you know, you're going to be lucky if you sell 50 books of any one title type thing. And then, of course, the first book I put out sold 250 copies in the space of months. And I was just like, that's right, baby, because, you know, that might be your experience, but that's not going to be my experience. I mean, I'm going to keep pushing and pushing and pushing. And I find, too, that the one thing that's happening in the small press, and probably always has and probably always will, is that the publishers, because everything is stretched so thin, you know, and like I said, I definitely think you can blow the roof off of POD printing, because, you know, you think, okay, well, you know, there's not very much. It's low investment in the beginning. It's like low risk type thing, but then when they sell, you get nothing back. So really, what are you achieving? Whereas my view has always been, you know, it's a small press, but we're going to operate like a big press. We're going to do the press releases. Like right now, for instance, there's 7 active Epic Rights titles that are being studied in universities. But that didn't happen by chance. I mean, I went out and I printed those press releases. I did those broadsides, I put them all into envelopes, I did my research. What universities are doing courses that these books would fit? What are the professors' names? Okay, where's the address? Do up a separate cover letter for each one and send it out. All that stuff costs money, you know. But in the end, if you get them to pick up your book, well, now all of a sudden you're selling, you know, 50 copies every 3 months, right? And that keeps building and building and building. Rob's book, for instance, A Belly Full of Anarchy, might be there now, but I know that's getting close to 2,000 copies sold, which, of course, in the small press is fucking unheard of. I mean, and that book, again, is still, the universities keep coming back and coming back and coming back. That book's going to, say, 40 students every semester 40 students every class, and you know they're talking, and he's building and building. All that started from a press release that cost me a few cents to print, you know, about a buck to ship, and then whatever energy I put into finding the right places to send that. So you got to do your research, and you got to do, you know, you can't sit on your books and hatch them like eggs, you know, going, well, I'll never get my investment back. Well, you know what? You just keep going. Keep going forward and keep going forward and keep going forward, and you keep doing those types of things you need to do. Trial and error. You know, once you find something that works, you take it down, you deconstruct it, and you go, okay, now I just need to duplicate this.
Now, do you think that the internet, in a way, has ruined the ideal of having these presses that your press that you're talking about, instant gratification, online stuff? Do you think it's like ruining the possibility of what you're doing? Not ruining you, but like ruining maybe others.
You know, I think that's kind of a double-edged sword. I mean, as far as it goes for me, I don't really even pay attention to what anyone else is doing. I'm very tunnel vision in that regard. You know, like, for instance, I got some guy on my Facebook page the other day, comes by, starts shitting on the author, shitting on the press. I say, you know what, buddy, you know, I feel sorry for you, man. Like, life is so short that it's really unfortunate that you do this. And then, of course, he tried to goad me on. I just went and blocked him, you know, because quite literally, life is too short. I don't have time for that. You know, this instant gratification, and you can tell these presses right off the bat, you know, they come up, and then within, like, say, 2 months, they have 10 titles, you know. Why? Because they're not paying to print it. It doesn't cost anything to put up an ebook. And maybe they think that, you know, more is better or whatever. You know, it's really, it's a great question, it really is. I don't think that necessarily applies to anything I'm doing, you know?
Yeah, I wasn't trying to, like, say that. I was just wondering, because you have, like, this big, huge machine gun that you're doing here that sounds spectacular, actually. I mean, I don't know a lot about the, being the writer, I don't know a lot about the business side of it. I don't know what goes on, like, with my publishers at all. Like, I mean, they'll tell me if I ask them, but what you're doing is, like I said, is kind of unheard of, like you said. But I just do you have any like future plans where all this is going, or are you just like taking it all like one day at a time, one stroke at a time?
Well, you know, it's funny. I think I should mention one thing too. Like, I still do things the traditional way, which is like I actually print books. There's actually a run of books. So I walk into the printer, I pick up my books, I pay for my books, I have boxes of books. When you have that, that gives you that incentive. You see, POD, you really never see anything, and if nobody ever buys the book, there's never a book printed. So really, there is no print run. When you do it the traditional way, and you go and you proof the book, and then you order the run, and then you have a quantity of books, I mean, you have your back against the wall, right? If you're going to recoup your money that you put into that book, you need to fucking sell those books. I mean, that's the bottom line. So, you know, you do the sort of things that you need to do to make sure that that title has a fair shot. Now, sure, it still might not sell, but it really gives you that fire to get out and get busy and do what you got to do. With POD printing, if you do a book and there's no interest, what do? You go on to the next one. And then you go on to the next one, and you go on to the next one. Pretty soon you have 50 titles. None of them have sold, but you just keep going and going, hoping that next one's going to be the thing. And you never learn that hard lesson of what it takes to promote and market and sell that title. So you're really no further along on your 50th book as you were on your first. You know. So I think in that regard, that's one of the things that pushes me. As far as future plans go, we've now done with Zach Wilson, we've now done our first novel, which is phenomenal. Zach really, really, really brought a great work of literature. We're doing Rob Plath's Swallitude. We're doing Misty's novel next year. So that's one area I want to get into. I want to definitely keep expanding. We have a children's book coming out by John Yamris, a children's book coming out by Rob Plath. I've been getting on William Taylor Jr. about getting a children's book together because he has some great ideas. So that's another market, you know. I think it's important for me, like, it's like, okay, so, you know, the poetry books are selling really well. That's fine, but you never want to be pigeonholed as a poetry publisher or a poetry author or anything. So you take a guy like Rob Plath, he's done, we've put out a play, we've put out a book of poetry, we have a novel coming out, we have a children's book coming out, so it's really important for me to showcase all these different areas, and not that I want to be in as many genres as I possibly can, because that's not the case, but if I see the potential in the author, I really want to go for it, you know, because, you know, everyone's always trying to fit you into a little box. I want to dynamite those little boxes and go, no, you know, that's not what it's about. With Pagemaster, I am 100% committed to the company and also what we're doing there. Starting in September, we're going to be hosting weekly readings. But these aren't just readings. We're working a lot of different elements in together. We also work with artists. So we print books. Or we specialize in words and images in print. So we do books, and we also do archival quality art prints. So the readings now will be supplemented with art. So we'll have like a featured artist on the walls and then a featured reader, or, you know, whether it's just like a an open mic type thing. I want to start doing local readings with international authors through Skype. I have a really good idea to get that going. So, for instance, I could actually do like a, you know, a poetry reading with Frank Reardon, hosted live here in Edmonton, have you live doing the reading on the screen, and have you actually be able to interact with your audience while it's going down. So that's another thing
I'm
looking at.
They did that in Kansas City.
It works.
They did it in Kansas. Michael Crichton and those guys did that in Kansas City, and it works pretty well. I don't know.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's a
movie projector that'll go into a computer, put you on the movie screen, hook you through a sound system, live, Mr. Frank Reardon. That's excellent,
so,
man. I love it, and I'm glad to hear that somebody had the balls to try it before I did, and it works. That's good news. That makes me feel good.
Yeah. They didn't actually do the reading. There was someone who couldn't make it, so they watched from the Skype, and they could see everything going down. So it was kind of the reverse.
That's pretty cool.
But,
that's pretty cool, man.
Did they...
You know, and another thing I got going is I'm still, you know, when I started, the Pagemaster kind of pushed some projects back, but they're starting to get going again. I want to do There Were No Butchers. I actually want to do that live in a theater. I think that would be something phenomenal. I don't know if you've read the play, but it's very surrealistic. It's like theater of the absurd. And once those doors close, I don't think anyone is going to recover from that experience. It would be phenomenal to do that. And I also want to do like an annual Epic Rights Press type reading. I'm looking towards Jasper and getting a bunch of Epic Rights Press authors down and some other authors from other presses. And doing like a big extravaganza type deal, which hopefully will happen, you know, and maybe that Skype thing will come into play there as well.
Hmm. Where you gotta do that, like in Canada or America or whatever the hell you're gonna do it?
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. I've missed out on a lot of book launches, ERP book launches. I finally got my passport going, so. Pretty soon, I believe that I will be able to get into America, and we'll get some stuff going down there too. What I'm looking for is I'm in love with Jasper, Alberta. It's such a picturesque, surrealistic place. That's where I'd like to do it. And you know, we'll try to get it as close to, you know, the border as we can. You know, but yeah,
I would absolutely
love to do that.
So we're down to, like, the last 10 minutes. Do you want to tell the audience who might be interested in some of your authors how they can go about getting them or finding them?
Well, you know, basically everything has remained the same other than the, as far as the big wholesale order. So all our books are available on Amazon.com. They're up on Amazon.ca. here in Canada. You can get them through Book Manager. You can get a hold of them for if you're looking to put them in your bookstore or your university or your library. You can get a hold of PageMaster Publication Services. You could look us up at distribution@pagemaster.ca. Check out the PageMaster website, www.pagemaster.ca. You got a toll-free number. We take, payment, credit card, PayPal, you name it. We got it going. Right now, coming out, the most recent books, of course, are Death is Dead by Rob Plath, and They Never Told Me This Would Happen by John Yamris, and Stumbles and Half Slips by Zach Wilson. And those are all up at Amazon.com. I checked before the show, and I seen that quite a few sales came in today, so that's always great to see.
I just wanted to say that as a purchaser of some of your books to the audience, they're excellent quality. One of my personal favorites is An Age of Monsters by William Taylor Jr. That collection just, I don't know, I shit a brick or something. It's an outstanding book. Yeah, and Carl Koleski's book is outstanding, and Jason Hardone's, and Rob's work is great. It's all great stuff. I don't know. It's really good to hear somebody doing something. I'll say it 100 times, but, you know, whatever.
That's excellent. So, Age of Monsters. There's only a couple copies left from the first printing, which is always great to hear. So that'll be going into a reprint very shortly. It's interesting about Pup Book, that came about through the title story. I actually read the title story back in the MySpace days on William's blog. And I read that story and I was like, holy shit, that's one twisted, beautiful, monstrous story. And then, of course, the story behind it was some editor had told everyone, said, well, I haven't got any stories about any drunken, twisted clowns. And so I guess that inspired William to create that story. And then he sent the story in, and the editor said, well, we don't like it or whatever. So I got a hold of him, and that actually appeared in the Epic Rights Journal, Building a Better Bomb. And then from there, everything just kind of fell into place, and we got this collection together, and we got Julie to do the images, which were just phenomenal, and of course Pablo's artwork was so provocative, and it was really a really good project.
Nice. Are you still now that Rob's taken over the Tree Killer Ink there? You still putting it out the same way? I don't think I've heard much about it lately. Are you still doing it the same way?
One thing that happened with Tree Killer Ink is, it's the last issue was the Dan Fante double issue. So what we're doing is, the way that it works down is there's 12 issues. Now, they might not necessarily be, January, February, March, April, May, June, July. It's really more about the material. You've heard about, some editors who go, oh, the deadline was there, so I had to put out some stuff that was subpar or whatever. We don't ever want to do that. We want to make sure that we're putting out the strongest material. All the material for the all-women's issue is now gathered. So that issue will be coming out soon. I'm going away in August, so probably September. So we're just going to keep getting the best material we can, and when we have enough to do the issue, we'll put the issue out. Of course, that's all supplemented by the broadsides and also by the subscription books for the ones who've subscribed. So I want to send out probably before I take off in August, I want to get Milner Place, that book, Joe and Maisie Fay. I want to get that one out to the subscribers. So even though there's not going to be an issue, you're still going to get your autographed copy of the book, and then we'll come back with the issue. But
yeah,
Rob
that's
and
good.
I are totally on the same page with that. I mean, if the material isn't there yet, the material's not there yet, what are you going to do? It's one of the classic things that as an author you never want to do, and as a publisher you never want to do. You never want to put words on the page just to fill a page.
Exactly. So a hard lesson to learn for sometimes for some people, including myself at one time. So I don't like, you know, it's, I'm not like trying to like, yeah, myself, I was the same way. So, I mean, you just don't, definitely don't want to fill a page, and it's too bad. But, the time's winding down. Any last thoughts or any last things about the Epic Rights?
I'll tell you what, here's what I'd like to do. On the bus ride home today, I was actually reading through John's recent collection here, which is absolutely phenomenal. What I'd like to do maybe is maybe I'll just read a few poems from there. I actually have some bookmarks that, if that's okay with you, I'd like to do that.
Yeah, go for it.
All right, this is these are poems from They Never Told Me This Would Happen by John Yamris. It's available right now on Amazon.com. You know, if you want to come down to the Epic Rights website, that's epicrights.org, and I'll read a few poems from there. Doing the laundry. I separate the whites and the colors, those items that can be washed in hot and those that must be washed in cold. The running washer sounds like white noise, oddly comforting. I laugh at the uselessness of it all as I start to dust. Picture this. This basement where I write is lined with books. And where there are no books, there are DVDs of old movies. And where there are no old movies, there's a refrigerator filled with beer and a cabinet filled with wine. Put in a bathroom and I could easily live down here. Then there's the dog, the world, and you.
Oh, nice ending.
At the very least. It was quite an interesting night. When it was over, one of the camera people walked up to me and said, I've never heard poetry like that before. I thanked her, unhooked the mic, and got out of there as quick as I could. My wife, my dog, and a crony with lime were waiting for me. I had no reason to stay.
True.
Think about it. What would you do if everything in your life was perfect? No problems, no bills, no worries. Nothing but perfect. The horror is beyond imagining. Don't let them fool you. God knew what he was doing when he created death. The boring poet. In every single poem quotes in Greek, just to let you know he knows. He's also prone to dropping names. The more obscure, the better. And it's also lifeless and so boring. He's all that's wrong with poetry today. My advice to him would be to open up his veins and tell the truth. Leave a little of your life on the page. Do that, and you can even get away with it in Greek.
Yeah.
Now my
that
friend
was a great
wrote
ending.
Poems from he never told me this would happen.
Well, it was great having you on. The lady's telling me I got to get off, but that was a great interview. Thank you.
Yeah, you know what? Thank you so much. It's been an honor and a pleasure to be part of this series. I've listened to the shows. I think what you're doing, my friend, is phenomenal. Keep spreading the good word.
All right, thank you. I'll be talking to you.
All right, cheers, brother.
You too. Okay, that was Wolfgang Karstens, epicrights.org. If you want to get any of the books, if you're interested, or you know, shoot him an email or what have you. Next week, our guest will be my cousin, Erin Reardon, and her drunken self out in Massachusetts. So tune in for that, and I believe the show after that is Hobo Camp Review publisher James Duncan, and I'm pretty sure after that it's John Yammers. That might be a week after that, I don't know. But tune in next week, same time, 11 Eastern, 8 Pacific, for Erin Reardon, and that was just Wolfgang Karstens' Epic Rights. Have a good one.